Coming back to Baiguri now, it's been about 4 or 5 days for me since I returned from the Pacific Hermitage, and it's quite a helpful thing because there's it kind of allows me to really look at the mind and see different perceptions that are held around place and time, and returning to a place that we call home for ourselves, having been away for a long time. And it's never quite how I imagine it. The sort of returning to conditions as I think they're going to be. But one thing that's quite easy to get used to is, just the how used to my own mind, and how for many of us, I would guess that it's true that we're all used to how we see things and perceive things and understand things. So I find it quite beneficial to explore things in that way and just not take it for granted, moving to a new place or somewhere where we feel very comfortable being. It's helpful to look at our minds because we're not permanent entities. We're changing all the time. And so when that arriving takes place, it's really I found it really helpful to explore, because all of a sudden I have new eyes in a way, and that can be temporary because things can become quite comfortable or normal, or there can be a getting used to things very quickly. And I find for myself that's often a danger, because then I stop seeing the things that are no longer new to me, or that I take for granted or make assumptions around. And in the last reflection I gave, I was talking a little bit about this, that also the sense of how we practice in different situations, there are things that those situations can highlight, or they can bring benefit to us in certain ways, but also there can be blinders we don't always see. So as I was talking about it, being at the Hermitage for the last 8 months, the monastery was very simple there, and we actually did engage in the sort of the namesake of the place as a hermitage. The monks, we didn't have, as I've mentioned, we didn't have pujas, and there was alms round 5 days a week, and just a lot of time for solitude and quiet. So coming back to Baiguri, it's really beneficial because I can see that all of the ways that I benefited from that kind of experience, living with a small number of monks, was also quite enjoyable. It seemed less activating in certain ways, kind of just living with a couple of friends. But then coming back to a Baiguri, where there's a different sense of training and and what that, you know, what that means in a larger community. It's really helpful to kind of think of that from a contextual term, you know, like that are in ways like the mind arises within that context, and we want to be aware that you know, all of us have our particular propensities, and these propensities arise, but they are held within a context. And that context is wherever, you know, wherever we find ourselves in. And ultimately, the, you know, the practice is about maintaining equanimity and understanding and surpassing dukkha. You know, it's really like being released from the typical suffering that we have, that we experience. And so the context doesn't have to matter for one who's been practicing very well and for a very long period of time, so, or however long it takes one to manifest those qualities that allow the letting go of that dukkha, that suffering. But while we're doing that, I think it's important to also pay attention to the context and see how it is that each one of us actually is affected by how we live, who we live with, and how we engage with our, you know, our material existence. So for myself, one of the ways I see that is that it's easier for me to live with a, you know, a small number of people, and I might not be alone in that. And so, in coming from the hermitage, I can just see the complaining minds. Oh man, there's so much activity here, and just the, you know, I can really get things going pretty easily. That can come up. And just to know, you know, just one of those things was something about how the structure was going to change in the monastery, just the schedule, how we were going to do pujas during the vasa. And just the, I could just see that intense kind of, oh, I'm really not looking forward to that. And how helpful it is to really try to examine that process of assuming and creating a reality of something that doesn't actually exist. And so what I found was helpful was to say, well, I have no idea what it's going to be like. It might be actually quite helpful for me, you know, this change. And so I think it often comes down to a sense of discontent and a sense like that things aren't right or aren't good enough. And we were talking about that at tea today. So one of the guests asked about dealing with that in terms of just thinking that there's not enough time. I think we just had a little earthquake, if I'm not wrong. Anyway, there's a sort of thought that like, oh, that it's not good enough. However I'm practicing isn't good enough. And this particular question had to do with formal practice and meditation, and just that I'm not doing it right, or I'm not doing enough of it. And there was a sort of an internal smile with that, because it's such a common experience, just thinking that, not just with formal meditation, but how often it is, it's just there, we're not good enough. There's something wrong with me and what I'm doing, how I'm doing things. just before I had entered the room, I'd been pretty late for the tea times, and today I was getting. I've developed a habit of, which I think will change to some other habit, but of drinking coffee. And since I was at the Hermitage, and so I was grinding my own coffee, and it really wasn't working out. And it was decaf, by the way, just in case some of you think you're going to be here for a couple hours. And I just was getting more and more upset as I was doing, you know, I was like, can it really take this long? It's been like 10 minutes. And then I wasn't satisfied with how it worked out, and I put it back in the grinder, and then it clogged everything up. I walked into the people who were waiting at tea. I said, it's just going to be a few more minutes. And then a couple of the monks tried to help me. And I just got obsessively persistent around making sure that this cup of coffee was going to happen. And there wasn't, I think there was a subtle awareness at how dissatisfying this was going to, it was just going to continue to be dissatisfying, and I believed that it wasn't when I was going to drink it, but that's just how it was. And it's hard to see that in the moment. I just saw how difficult it was to let go of something that I wanted to make right. And so, sure enough, when I finally had finished this. I think it took me like 20 minutes or 30 minutes. It was just there was just this recognition of like, wow, this just was all of this buildup to accomplish a task. It just wasn't worth it. And it was a sense, I think, of holding on through that whole period that I couldn't just see the letting go that could occur in that moment. And I think it was just this sort of extreme expression of discontent. So when I went in the room, I couldn't even really enjoy what I was creating. And so when that question came up, it really, it kind of hit home right in that moment. It's like, yeah, that's right. That's how we often experience things. It's just not good enough. We're not good enough, the coffee's not good enough, whatever it is. And it can be confusing because the question came out of a very noble aspiration to kind of like to meditate, to engage in a formal practice, to engage in something we're being taught in how to do to alleviate suffering in our lives. And yet, in the back of our minds, it's just there's this weight or this flavor of not good enough. And so, it's the thing about it is, it's eventually when we're observing this, when we're seeing this sense of discontent. There is eventually, I think, an ability to let go of it, and it's not always through being content, it's not through forcing ourselves to be content or to seeing that there's some way I have to get through this feeling that things aren't right. It's more of a sense of just being okay with that feeling. Just observing it and seeing that it arises and it passes. And we can think about it in all sorts of ways, like I'm not, I've made, mistakes, or like, I'm a bad work monk, or I'm not good at relating to other people, or whatever it might be. I wish I was better. Or we pound it into ourselves, I have to get better, I'm going to do this in the right way. And we unfortunately believe that, and that's the problem. So when we're engaging with this, there is a potential for us to really see clearly that this voice that we're hearing, this not good enough voice, is essentially it's not a benefit to us. As I was talking about, it's like when the Buddha talks about, you know, Mara, and Mara is there trying to pull his particular tricks, and the Buddha just says, I see you, Mara. And it's that very acknowledgement that's so helpful, because there isn't really a way we can get away from that pervasive sense that things aren't good enough, because that's really for the enlightened ones. That's really the end of practice, when that's no longer there. And so I think it's a lifetime of dealing with that. But as I was also mentioning, there's a sense of tasting fruits along the path, and so we do have that potential to uproot the discontent in our lives and uproot the suffering that we experience as we go along. And so it's like, it's not like, you know, we just keep practicing and suffering and suffering and suffering, and then all of a sudden there's this bright light and it's all gone. What we are developing is a pathway to gain more and more contentment in our lives. And that is through acceptance, you know, acceptance of what it is that we experience, rather than that tendency to push it away, or to believe in the conditions as resolving our particular dilemma or experience. And I think one of the themes that came up at the Hermitage a lot when I was talking with people, and what people had questions about, was also around forgiveness. And I kind of feel that this ties in well with how we think about dissatisfaction or, you know, discontent. Because the sense that I often feel is that there's something wrong with me, there's something wrong internally. And so I can resolve that through you know, forcing myself to be better, you know, like as was the question that originated, you know, so many hours of meditation or figuring out what the Buddha means in a particular sutta, or you know, getting through some sort of problem that I have. And it can be a very pervasive push in the direction towards really perfection, getting it right. And that can feel very painful, you know, very painful. And it doesn't leave us room to feel that, as I was mentioning, that sense of being okay with conditions, whatever they are, or being okay with our particular discontent. So I think it's you know, as I've been doing this now about 20 years, you know, engaging with the Buddha's teachings, and about 15 have been in the monastery. And I sometimes will, you know, just bring up the perceptions and the sense of what I had in the beginning, you know, what it was that drove me, what I was interested in. And I think it's very important to try to bring that up as much as possible, because those are sort of like those are the early roots that we've kind of spread out, begun to spread out into the ground as we're growing in like the tree of Dhamma. And sometimes those roots aren't being watered as much. And so that sense of sort of inspiration that we have, that I thought would be, you know, just fueling me all along, that can kind of dry up a little bit, and we need to kind of try to nourish those roots a bit, make sure that they're getting watered well. And I think they come from, again, that sense of there's something wrong, there's something that isn't right. And so when we're moving more into that direction rather than trying to understand contentment in a much more profound way, then we can actually lose the that beginning inspiration we have if we're not nurturing our minds well. And I think that that can come about for various reasons, you know, especially with just falling on old habits. But if we're properly bringing up that you know, our interest in the Dhamma, what it is that we have an interest in, then we can see that, like, the discontent that we often feel, it's just something that's on a much more coarser side. You know, it's something that it's elusive, but it's also something that if we're able to look at it and we're able to see how to uproot it, then we have the potential to gain benefit from that. And in so doing, that does really water our own roots of inspiration. You know, it keeps the fire alive when we're really paying attention to that. And it does take effort. You know, it takes effort to go against not only our old habits, but that very habit of kind of seeking satisfaction through discontent, through thinking that if only it was like this or like that. If only I had a different mind, or I had come to this practice earlier, or I had a different teacher, or I had whatever, you just fill in the blank. And so what I was talking about with forgiveness is that we have the potential to essentially allow ourselves to be making mistakes, allow ourselves to, you know, still be crazy after all these years, and at the same time we're still working to develop contentment. We're still working to develop a sense that there is satisfaction even though things are difficult or painful. But it's not easy, because I find that for myself, it seems like forgiveness is something that is bestowed upon us. You know, it's something that we get from the outside, rather than from our internal experience. And I was reflecting on that a little bit this evening, because one of the other monastics had come up to me and had just asked for forgiveness around some past actions. And it was very beautiful. It was a very beautiful gesture and very heartfelt. And I felt quite uplifted by it. But I also wanted to acknowledge to him, you know, just, well, it, you know, it goes both ways. And surely I'm, you know, I'm not bereft of making my own mistakes in that relationship, and so just extending that as well, that as my mom used to always tell me growing up, it takes two to tango. But I also think that there was a little bit of a tinge in me that I felt that was, you know, was also that. But yeah, but I don't actually forgive myself for that, for my own mistakes. And so I'm not sure how many of you experience that in your own lives, just asking yourself if you sort of have that potential. But it's quite helpful for me in my own practice to look at that, because what I've found is that no matter how much I want to either seek forgiveness from another person, or if I believe I was wronged, it's always an internal job. It always comes from inside, that sense of letting go of the very person that I'm holding inside, which is, you know, myself and my own expectations. So we sometimes think about that term of like asking forgiveness from another person. And that is a beautiful act. But I think it's important really to focus on the forgiveness we've offered to ourselves. Because I don't actually think that true forgiveness is present until we've actually brought that into our own hearts, and for our own trespasses, the mistakes we make. And so that, for me, goes hand in hand with that question where it was like, well, you know, I just don't think I'm doing well enough. I'm not doing a good job. I'm not meditating enough, or my speech is really off, or I've hurt this other person, or I've done something that was wrong. And so that question arises, well, can I really allow that to be okay? You know, is it something internally that I can feel equanimity around, or I can feel that there's space, you know, there's not that pressure to become or to be perfect or whatever it might be. And sometimes, you know, just like grinding a cup of coffee, you know, little things can take on a big flavor in the mind. And it's in those times where it's not just the really painful aspects, or the deeply, you know, remorseful times that we feel we've made some cause some problems in our lives or for others. It's also our training is in these little things that we're doing all the time. We're not seeing how we're often holding things. It's our attitude that we're bringing into our experience. So I think about, like, sometimes in the monastery there can be a hiding out factor. I've noticed in myself, just sometimes, you know, I don't want to really engage with others or something, so I'll keep my eyes down. And that can be praiseworthy. That can be a praiseworthy act. But it just depends on, as I said, the attitude and what the reason is. Is there a kind of folding in to, you know, acknowledging another person or fear? Either not feeling right about a particular circumstance or a situation. And then when I actually am aware of something like that and I open my eyes and I look up, acknowledge another person, it's 100%. I've never found it to be a negative thing. You know, just to see like, oh yeah, you know, just to, it's just not that bad. You know, and to actually open myself up to something that's difficult or to try to not give into that sense of, well, if I kind of hide away or I don't, you know, I just kind of see that it's the conditions that are causing me discontent, then I'll resolve things in that way. There's so many times in my monastic life that I've thought, well, if this, if I just didn't have to live with this monk, then everything would be great. And just how many times I've been wrong on that one. And it's just the mood. It's just the that sense of dissatisfaction. And so then the times when I've opened myself up to my own experience and just acknowledge that internally, like, oh yeah, there's some difficulty with someone or whatever, and then allowed that in with my own mind. It's like, well, that, you know, it's just very normal. I don't know why there's a sense of expecting perfection. But it's there. And so with the acknowledgement of it, then there's, oh, okay, well, maybe I can look at this in a different way. And then the situation changes. It's no longer solid. If it involves another person, then it's, you know, they actually become another person. They're not that that uniform entity that I've sort of engraved in my mind. So I think much of the work that we're doing is really trying to look very clearly into that sense that things just aren't right, and to kind of like answer that within ourselves. So, well, that's right. That's just exactly what the Buddha was teaching. So that's samsara. But he didn't. If one thinks that that's the Buddha's only message, that like life is suffering, which is not what he actually said. He said there is suffering. When we acknowledge that, we say, oh yeah, okay, it's all right, you know, and that's where the contentment can arise. Because over and over, when we are experiencing things, oh, it shouldn't be like this. I wish it was different. It's like, well, yeah, that's pretty normal. But am I okay with just things as they are? And it's, you know, it's an obvious thing. I'm not saying really much new here. But I can say that over 20 years of practice, that there's times when I'm just truly amazed at how easy it is to get caught up in believing in the sense that if I just have this or that in a better way, or if I was different or whatever it is, it can so easily catch the mind off guard. in a very consistent way. And so as we're, you know, as we're living in a monastery or outside of a monastery, it doesn't really matter. It's just kind of consistently engaging with that. You know, you're walking around, taking care of things, and whatever it is you're doing, the mind can just very easily wander off. And so we're opening ourselves up to that experience, but we're also looking at our particular habits and where we get lost for each of us, and consistently trying to just bring the mind back. We don't have to punish ourselves or, there I go again. God, when am I going to get this right? It's actually really nice to just say, oh, what a great opportunity I have to notice the mind has wandered again, or I've gone into this particular way of thinking that's not really beneficial. How amazing it is to notice that and to examine it and to have the opportunity, because of the Buddha, because of our many teachers who have gifted us with an understanding of the Buddha Dhamma, we have that potential to really awaken in those moments and feel the joy of understanding and letting go. So I think I'll end here with a potentially longer night ahead of us. And anything that I've said that's been helpful, please bring that into your heart and mind. And anything that hasn't been very useful, just feel free to leave it behind.